At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
I mean, honestly, you gotta feel a little bad for Jay Powell, right? Here he is a mere 24 hours ago.
After simmering early in the year, trade policy tensions nearly boiled over in May and June, but now appear to have returned to a simmer.
What happened? Oh, you get one guess. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thursday, the 1st of August. Good as always to have you along, everybody.
Thing is, there isn't a lot of experience in responding to global trade tensions.
Amazeballs, though it may be. Jay Powell, that was him again yesterday at his press conference. Every single day, the chairman of the Federal Reserve is getting more experience in responding to global trade tensions, courtesy of the president of the United States. If your one guess, as I suggested up in the open, was that there was trade war news from the White House today, you are our lucky winner. President Trump has decided to put 10% tariffs on the remaining $300 billion worth of Chinese imports to this economy, effective 1 September. So to recap, we import $550 billion or so dollars worth of stuff from China every year. I will let the president give you the breakdown, standing as he likes to do to frustrate radio reporters in front of a helicopter with its engines turning.
We're now taking in tariffs on 10% on over $300 billion and 25% on $250 billion. And it's been proven that our people are not paying for those tariffs.
So about that last bit, the proven bit, who's paying? It's been proven, actually, that American consumers are. That's what's been proven. One more thing about trade policy by tweet. It has to be noted here, and the president has done this before. He's threatened tariffs and then not actually carried through after negotiations. He did it with Mexico earlier this summer. So we got a month to go on this one. Wall Street, though, and the bond market, not at all happy, about which more in just a bit. Back, though, we will go to Chair Powell, because as you know, if you happen to catch this program yesterday, he talked about a lot of big picture things after the Fed decided to cut interest rates, including what he is worried about besides trade. Business investment is one of those things. And as it happens, we learned this morning U.S. business investment fell in the last quarter, almost a full percentage point, the weakest showing since 2015. But here's the thing. Powell says the Fed's rate cut is not going to help that.
They don't come in and say we're not investing because, you know, the federal funds rate is too high. I haven't heard that from a business. What you hear is that demand is weak for their products. You see manufacturing being weak all over the world. Investment, business investment is weak.
Well, so now what? Marketplace's Sabri Benishore is on the business investment beat today.
Businesses invest when there is a bright future to invest in. Simon Gilchrist is professor of economics at NYU.
So any slowdown in business investment is a potential bellwether for what might be to come.
That is why we care about the fact that investment is slowing down. So why is it slowing down? Yad Levinon is chief economist at the Conference Board.
What we had in the last 6 or 8 months is a deterioration in the economic outlook.
Remember the government shutdown last winter, the terrible stock market? And then we had an escalation in trade tensions and more escalation of trade tensions, and growth in the rest of the world continued to slow down.
A lot of businesses lowered their expectations.
You can see that pretty harshly if you zero in on manufacturing. New orders are barely expanding. Manufacturers are running down their backlog of old orders. Timothy Fiore tracks this for the Institute of Supply Management.
It makes me nervous because if we don't get those new order levels up, we're going to run out of backlog to work on. And when that happens, you start laying people off.
Now, people have asked businesses, small businesses in particular, are interest rates a problem? Is it that you can't get the credit you want?
2% complain about credit issues.
Bill Dunkelberg is chief economist of the National Federation of Independent Businesses.
There's really no issue on the credit side.
No issue on the credit side. So you got to ask, will the Fed's lowering interest rates help business spending on investment?
The impact is going to be minimal to negligible to none.
Tendai Kapfidze is chief economist at LendingTree. He says all that other stuff, trade worries, low demand from abroad for U.S. products, all that is more significant than a quarter point rate cut. Doesn't mean the Fed's rate cut is useless. It still supports the economy generally, but getting businesses to invest in the future, going to take more than that. In New York, I'm Sabri Benishore for Marketplace.
You want another good indicator of how this economy's doing? Look out the window as you're driving around. Keep your eyes peeled for orange traffic cones and scaffolding. Construction spending is what we're talking about. It's about 4% of gross domestic product, and it hit an all-time high last year. But last year is last year, right? And it turns out construction spending has slipped a tad this year. Marketplace's Ben Bradford has that one.
Construction spending fell more than a percentage point in June. Not a ton, but it is the second month in a row.
This could indicate a weakening of the all-important construction sector.
Susan Wachter is an economist at Wharton.
It could be a bellwether, a harbinger of a slowing of the overall economy.
But if that were the case, economists would expect to see less demand for new buildings. Ken Simonson, chief economist for the industry group Associated General Contractors, says his members are as busy as ever.
They're not reporting any cancellations, any deferrals by owners, whether it's public agencies, private developers.
He says, if anything, the industry is too hot. A labor shortage is affecting the pace of building.
They would be doing more now if they had more workers on hand.
Publicly funded construction, such as on roads, bridges, and government buildings, tumbled the most in June, almost 4%. But it's still one of the best performing sectors in the industry. Alec Carrick, chief economist for software firm Construct Connect, says construction spending overall is strong, but not as high as it could be.
Construction is still taking place. It's just that we're not getting the real peak that analysts have been expecting.
He attributes that to technological disruption. E-commerce has left a lot of storefronts open. Automation lets manufacturers downsize. People can telecommute to their offices. All of which means, as the economy expands, there's less need to build new real estate to keep up. I'm Ben Bradford from Marketplace.
So we've done construction and manufacturing. What about consumers? Well, here's something. Homeowners starting to pull equity out of their homes. If that sounds familiar, it is. Think 2007 and 2008. Low interest rates and rising home values can be an attractive nuisance, so to speak. According to the Federal Housing Administration, more than 150,000 homeowners with FHA loans pulled cash out of their homes in fiscal 2018. That is triple as many as did that just 5 years ago. Marketplace's Erica Barris is on that.
Say you bought a house 10 years ago for $300,000 and that it's now worth $500,000. Cashing out means you refinance your mortgage for the current value of the home, which is more than you paid for it, and pocket the extra cash. Benjamin Keyes, a real estate professor at the Wharton School of Business, says that's attractive to a lot of homeowners for a lot of reasons.
They're using the money for home renovations, for durable purchases like cars or replacing appliances, but they may be also spending the money to pay for education or for just consumption, taking that summer vacation.
The catch is, what happens if your house declines in value? FHA spokesperson Brian Sullivan says that could leave you with no equity in your home, or to use a phrase from the housing crisis, put you underwater.
And that really puts borrowers in a bind. It prevents them from selling their home, and it exposes them to a greater risk of foreclosure.
That's why the FHA is reducing the amount of equity homeowners can tap from 85% of their home's assessed value to 80%. The FHA is also putting more emphasis on borrowers' credit ratings. Lori Goodman with the Urban Institute says it makes sense because the FHA tends to work with riskier borrowers.
FHA is sort of trying to tighten restrictions in order to protect itself and to protect the fund that insures these mortgages.
The last time the FHA cut back on cash-out mortgages was right after the housing crash, when it reduced the amount of equity homeowners could tap from 95% to 85%. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
On the China story, by the way, if you want to know the backstory in the never-ending saga between Washington and Beijing, have we got a timeline for you? Marketplace.org is where you can find that. Here now, a serious question, totally serious. The president got the interest rate cut he wanted, Granted, not as much as he wanted, but he got one. The stock market was way positive this morning, getting back everything he gave away yesterday during Chair Powell's press conference and then some. And then the tariff tweet. Stocks cratered, bond yields tumbled, oil sank. Gold rose, though, safe haven and all that. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Going to take a detour to the labor force right now and how much people in it get paid. Illinois and New Jersey have joined a growing list of states that say employers can't ask job applicants about their salary histories. It's all part of a push to address some long-standing pay disparities between men and women or racial and ethnic groups, disparities that can be reinforced when applicants have to disclose what they made at their previous jobs. From the Workplace Culture Desk, Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino has more on that.
At first, Florida attorney Stephanie Hoffman says she didn't have much choice. As a state prosecutor, her salary details were public record, but
every job that I've had since then, I've always been asked, what are you making? And then been offered a little bit more.
And she thinks that's put her at a disadvantage. She once asked a male colleague fresh out of law school about his pay.
And he was making about $12,000 more than I was, even though I had 7 years of experience in the industry.
Ann Hedgepath with the American Association of University Women says questions about salary histories hurt women and minorities the most. Female workers still make about 80 cents for every dollar earned by a man in the same job, and the disparity is even greater for women of color. When employers ask about past salaries,
that can mean that they bake in the past experience of a gender pay gap, of bias and discrimination into your future earnings.
But businesses say not having a job seeker's past salary hurts their ability to sort through applicants and offer a fair wage.
You get an idea of where they've been and you get an idea of how they've been building up their career.
Nikki Cimino works in operations and HR for a nonprofit in Denver and says with salary data out in the open, it's easier to hone in on candidates who will be a good fit and avoid wasting time with overqualified applicants. She's pushed for her company to include salary details in their job postings instead. Research from John Horton at MIT shows hiring did take more time and effort when salary history was withheld, but when it came time for companies to make an offer,
they hired people who historically had earned lower wages.
Whether a state has these laws or not, workers can find a way around the question, like Yolanda Gartner, an engineer in Florida.
I will put in the very minimum that I'm willing to take that position at, or I will put inside that salary field negotiable.
Provided you have the savvy negotiating skills required to close the deal. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Americans are just really bad at taking vacations. Part of that is structural, right? There's no requirement that companies offer paid days off. But also, in a survey by the U.S. Travel Association, Americans said they are worried they would come back to, and this is a quote, a mountain of work. Also, that they think nobody else can do their job. Those were answers number one and two in that survey, by the way. But on those occasions when we do get away, most of us set up email responses to take our place while we're gone. Fodder for our occasional series, Automatic Reply.
Hello, I'm in Oaxaca, wearing board shorts, getting barreled, and possibly even making some memories. All the Melvin beer I brought is gone, and we have switched to Mezcal. I'll be working again starting next Tuesday. I'm actually going to try this vacation thing. I heard it's all the rage in France. Thanks.
That was Jeremy Tofty, the founder of Melvin Brewery in Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I don't know about that beard and mezcal thing, by the way. Tell us about an out-of-office email you've seen, would you? We'll get it on the program, marketplace.org. Coming up.
They're less interested in buying stuff and accumulating more things.
The great outdoors in a lightly used tent. But first, let's do the numbers. Honestly, should have been some mashup between the really happy music and the wah-wahs, because it was a 600-point swing on the Dow today. Blue chips off 280 points, 1%, 26,583. The NASDAQ off 64 points, about 0.7%, 81.11. The S&P 500 down 26 points, 0.8%, 29.53. As I said, up to start, then the president took to Twitter. Some of the big U.S. exporters suffered. Caterpillar down 3.7%. Boeing, which reported its biggest quarterly loss ever last week, gave back 2%. Part of that surely residue from the 737 MAX. Canadian airplane and train maker Bombardier posted a quarterly loss and lowered its 2019 forecast, setting challenges to its rail business. The Montreal-based company plunged 15% at today's trading. Airbus, on the other hand, reported a rise in quarterly revenues after seeing strong demand for its jetliners. Airbus stock gained 1% on the day. Kellogg beat expectations. Stock banked over 9% today. Bonds price rose. Yield on the 10-year Treasury note fell to 1.9%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. When New Orleans was facing all that flooding from Hurricane Barry a couple of weeks ago, along with really high water on the Mississippi River, I said to myself we ought to call Austin Golding, our river barge guy from Vicksburg, Mississippi. Golding Barge Lines is the family business. Anyway, we finally got around to it. Austin, good to talk to you again.
Absolutely, Kai. Good to talk to you again.
As usual, first question is, how's the barge business treating you?
Well, so far, it's been a challenging year. Unprecedented high water has really had an impact on not only the size cargoes we can bring, but also a lot of the facilities that we come in and out of. On top of that, it's also affected the cargoes we carry. So been a very unpredictable 2019, but at the same time, I think the economy rolling is the volumes are still there. We're just trying to find a way to move it.
All right, wait, help me understand why high water limits the kinds of cargo you can carry. I mean, the facilities make sense, right, because they're flooded. But how does that influence what you can put on the barge?
Well, first off, the calculation we make is can we stop? Okay. And the tonnage that we bring southbound, I mean, can we manage it? Can we manage it in a safe way? So southbound, it's about can you stop? Northbound, it's can you maintain a safe navigational speed? The other part about the cargo, Kai, is that a lot of the cargo that some of these other carriers that carry, you know, soybeans, corn, different kind of agricultural products, those products have been affected by the floodwater and the really, really wet year we've had so far already also. So right. Not only are cargoes on a volume down, but the types of cargo has been affected on the land side also.
Yeah, it makes total sense. Let me use you as a regional indicator, if I could. What's it like in Vicksburg and the general vicinity when you go out to the, you know, whether you're going to get a big piece of machinery for your barge fixed or whether you're going to the coffee store?
Well, right now, I think there's a lot of economic optimism. The job market is certainly tighter. We're not seeing the same volume of people come apply. We're having to have a several wage increases on our side. Our industry has seen wages go up significantly this year. So around Vicksburg, the labor market's tight and the economy seems to be pretty strong.
All right. Another big picture question since we're on that vein. I don't know if you saw yesterday the Federal Reserve cut interest rates for the first time in 10 years. Did you see that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Elsewhere in the program, we had a story on how, you know, Chair Powell basically saying, look, I've never had a business come to me and say, I'm going to invest more because the federal funds rate has been cut 0.25%. How does that translate to you and Golden Barge Lines, or is it just a non-issue?
It's a big issue for us, and I'll tell you why. I disagree with Chairman Powell because every basis point matters to us as a small business. So it may not necessarily be a black or white equation like he'd like to oversimplify it to kind of lay in there as mm-hmm. a good talking point, but it's important. It's absolutely important to us.
So just for the lay people out there, right? The Fed yesterday cut 25 basis points, which is 0.25%. You're saying even the tiniest little move in that makes a big deal for you.
Absolutely, for sure. I mean, when I'm counting on Mariners to be frugal in how they buy groceries and how they buy supplies, and they're saving tens of dollars or hundreds of dollars, if I can save thousands of dollars in one swoop on the front end, that's a responsibility I have to value.
Fascinating. Rest of 2019, what you looking at? And then I'll let you go.
Well, I think the economy's continue to be strong, but we do feel the kind of sluggish slag that certain people are identifying in the economy as well. We're seeing inventories build shoreside. We're seeing demand falter a little bit. As this election looms, I wouldn't blame people for maybe hitting the pause button a little bit on maybe investment or large cargo movements. But at the same time, my fingers are crossed that despite whatever uncertainty people may be forecasting or planning around, the economy's still strong and our sector is still going to see growth.
Always good to talk to you, man. Austin Golding at Golding Barge Lines down in Vicksburg. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Kai.
There have been lots of stories here and elsewhere about retail and how Amazon and the like are turning things upside down. But it's more than just e-commerce that's reshaping the retail economy. REI made its name selling outdoor recreation equipment. They've got about 150 stores, billions of dollars in sales, a chunk of which is coming through re-commerce, rentals and used gear becoming a bigger part of their business. Eric Arts is the CEO of REI. Welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kai. I appreciate you having me.
Do me a favor, would you, as a way to get going here, and tell me about this thing that y'all are working on a lot lately called the circular economy. And more to the point, tell me why.
Well, it goes back to the consumer, Kai. And what we see today with our consumers is a changing set of values in that they're less interested in buying stuff and accumulating more things. And they're really interested in more entry points into the outdoors, more accessible points into the outdoors, and frankly, more sustainable options in their life. I think this, you know, re-commerce engine is a continuing part of that story.
What's the forward guidance, if you will, on re-commerce as a percentage of your business? Do you envision REI going all the way to, 95, 100% re-commerce and new gear is just not what you do?
Well, we're preparing for an eventual day. None of us know when, but the possibility that a majority of gear purchases will come through something other than a full price transaction. Mm-hmm. So renting used event discounted products. So that's the world we're preparing for.
Dig into the spreadsheet for me, though, on sort of the cellular level and help me understand whether or not you are cannibalizing the new equipment sales with all these rentals, or is it all a wash and you're just kind of riding the wave of the future here?
Well, I'll go back to our purpose, Kai. We're very focused on not the, to your point, cellular level of profitability and transaction or even cannibalization. We're interested in getting you out, making those points of access and the on-ramp into the outdoors much easier.
It occurs to me, though, that in getting people outside with the re-commerce model, what you're actually doing, either serendipitously or intentionally, is getting them back into the store. Because if they rent a tent, they have to go in and pick it up, and then they bring it back. And then if they want to do it again, they're in the store again. And who knows, maybe they pick up a, you know, $5 trail map or, you know, whatever, right?
Yep. You've hit on the life cycle concept that we lean into in a powerful way. And those that engage in re-commerce generally end up being probably twice as valuable as a normal transaction-only customer. Hmm. So we're enriching their experience. We're building our relationship. We're leaning into our expertise, and they value that.
So let me poke you in the eye for a little bit. What you all are doing, and not just you, right, but North Face and Patagonia and you know, everybody else, are commercializing the great outdoors for profit. And how do you reconcile the, and this is hyperbolic, but how do you reconcile the beating that the great outdoors takes with your gear against your stated mission of trying to be conscientious about what you're doing with your gear?
Well, at REI, we're very focused on giving back. So we give back over 70% of our profits every year to the people that care about the outdoors. That goes to our members, that goes to our employees, and that goes to the communities that we serve. But, you know, I would say, Kai, this is equally about enlightening a life outdoors for our customers as well, because we know and we believe that people that participate, people that recreate, will care for the places that they recreate. Mm. So, you know, the other element of this re-commerce conversation is, you know, it's not only right to do from a customer perspective, but it's right to do from a planet perspective as well.
Eric Arts, he runs REI. Eric, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Final note on the way out today, in which I, for one, welcome our robot overlords. A law professor at the University of Surrey over in the UK has filed patent applications for two inventions created autonomously by artificial intelligence, that is to say, without a human inventor involved. They sound benign, these two things. One's a new kind of beverage container based on fractal geometry, however that might work. The second one is a thing that could help attract attention, something useful perhaps in search and rescue operations. Both cool, both useful, but it's robots inventing things all by themselves. And we are out of here. Dow Industrials down 280 points today, 1%. The NASDAQ off 64 points, 0.7%. S&P 500 down 26 points, 0.8%. Trade war status update, it's on. Amir Bibawe, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Heron Bikella, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.